Eddie, the 10-year reunion. Chapter 10. Moving Forward, Part 1. Lynn Burson and Penny Hart could hardly wait to see Emily's photography studio that Eddie bought a while ago, especially after hearing Mr. Fraser's speech at the reunion. The Monday following the reunion, Lynn and Penny arrive at Emily's former photography studio at 8 a.m., 1 hour before Eddie planned to meet them. Getting out of her car, Lynn mentions to Penny, "The house looks really beautiful. This parking lot is even awesome." Penny replies, "Yeah. I'd say so. The half-acre parking lot with 100 generous parking spaces is fully equipped with lighting and a small area of covered parking. A brick privacy wall around the sides and back sets the property off from the surrounding businesses, giving it a secluded feel." Lynn and Penny walk around the property, noticing that the building does, in fact, look fully renovated with no expense spared. Eddie arrives at the service station at 9 a.m., as promised. Walking over to the studio, Eddie sees Lynn and Penny sitting on the retaining wall, waiting patiently, or perhaps impatiently, for Eddie to arrive. Eddie yells out to them, "So, what do you think?" Lynn yells out, "It's beautiful." Walking up to the door, Eddie tells the two overly excited women, "Let's take a look inside." Walking through the front door into the reception area, it's hard not to notice the 12-foot ceilings and meticulously ornate woodwork. Getting down to business, Eddie points out, "The customer's restroom is right over there." Peeking into the beautifully appointed restroom, Lynn is now wondering how much Eddie is asking for rent. Walking through a door to the well-laid-out studio, Eddie mentions, "You guys can take a look around. If you have any questions, I can try to answer them." Penny asks, "How big is this place, anyway?" Eddie replies, "It's a little more than 4,000 square feet." As Lynn and Penny are taking their tour, Eddie mentions, "Mark found a box of cameras and lenses that were left with the property when he was doing the renovation. I asked Emily if she wanted them, and she said no. You guys can have them if you want." Lynn asks, "What kind of cameras are they?" Eddie replies, "They are some off-brands, Leica and Hassel something or another." Lynn exclaims, "Are you serious?" Penny exclaims, "Leica and Hasselblad. Those are no off-brands." Eddie mentions, "The cameras are in the darkroom." Lynn asks, "Where is the darkroom, anyway?" Eddie replies, "It's all the way down the hall, on the left." The darkroom was appropriately placed as far away from the working studio as possible, as darkroom chemicals have a distinctly unpleasant odor to some people. Not the least bit bashful in showing their excitement, Lynn and Penny race each other to the darkroom to see what kind of off-brand cameras to which Eddie was referring. Opening the box, the two professional photographers act more like little kids at Christmas time. Inside, Lynn and Penny find two Hasselblad medium format cameras used for portrait photography, both of which appear to be in great condition. Inside are also two impressive Leica 35mm cameras with quite a wide variety of fixed lenses. And the icing on the cake is a Nikon professional quality 35mm SLR camera, complete with an auto winder. Lynn and Penny look at each other as if they've discovered a gold mine. Lynn asks Eddie, "Did you say we can have these cameras?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. You guys can have them even if you don't rent the place. I really have no use for them." While Lynn and Penny are checking out their new cameras, Eddie curiously asks Lynn and Penny, "So, what was your first camera?" Lynn asks, "Do you mean my first real camera, or my first toy camera?" Eddie replies, "Your first real camera." Lynn replies, "Well, my first real camera was a Zenit 19. It's made in Russia. My father got a new camera, so I got his old one. I still have it today." Eddie asks Penny, "And how about you?" Penny replies, "My first real camera was a Leica 3F. And I still have mine today too. I found it in a church rummage sale for $20. I remember that, when I got it, it looked so complicated. But with my dad's help, I figured out how it works. Lynn tells Penny, I'm surprised that it even did work. At $20, it was obvious that they had no idea what they were selling. Penny replies, I know, right? After looking around, expecting the rent to be far more than what she is paying now, Lynn asks Eddie, how much is the rent, anyway? Eddie asks, what are you paying now? Lynn informs Eddie what she is paying for rent at her current location. Eddie generously tells Lynn that amount should work. Lynn, shocked at Eddie's generosity, replies, wow. Thank you so much. After all, Eddie is just holding on to the land and building, and is not looking to make a profit. If the rent were only to cover the expenses, Eddie is happy. With the new location instantly becoming a reality, Lynn and Penny meander around, going over every last detail of the studio. Lynn whispers to Penny, this place is more than I ever expected. Penny replies, and with Emily no longer in the business, we could definitely get really, really busy. Recalling Mr. Fraser's motivational speech at the reunion, Lynn tells Penny, we're doing this. This is what we were born to do. Penny agrees, replying, this will be way better than newspaper work. Penny is done working for the newspaper and has no problem expressing it. Lynn walks up to Eddie, announcing, I'll take it. Eddie replies, okay, and hands Lynn two sets of keys. Lynn asks, don't we need to do a lease and all that sort of stuff? Eddie replies, I don't do leases. They are too complicated. The only thing is that, in about 15 years, I'll probably want the building back. Eddie then tells Lynn, just bring the check by sometime this week. And, if you want, I can get some of the guys to help you move. Lynn exclaims, awesome. Lynn asks, would it be okay if Penny and I take the cameras with us to check them out? Eddie replies, no problem. They are yours. Lynn and Penny will likely spend the rest of the morning playing with their new toys and developing the film from the reunion this past weekend. In the afternoon, after delivering the pertinent photographs to the police station, they will begin packing up their current studio. Later that day, Paula drives her Jeep into Eddie's service station wanting to get her headlights replaced that Jimmy O'Brien so inconsiderately smashed over the weekend. Walking into the service bay where Eddie is working, Paula announces, I'm here. Eddie replies, hey. You made it. Paula tells Eddie, I dropped the kids off at my parents'. I didn't think you'd want them running around here making a mess of the place. Eddie tells Paula, they could always play in the back of the station, or in the gym. Paula replies, oh yeah. I forgot about that. Eddie gets the keys from Paula and drives her Jeep into an empty service bay. As Eddie is replacing the headlights, Paula asks, has Jimmy O'Brien shown up yet? Eddie replies, no. If he got his act together, he's probably flying over the Pacific Ocean right now, on his way home. If he didn't get his act together, he's probably in the hospital where they can't figure out what he's talking about. Or he could be roaming the streets. Paula asks, what's O'Brien's problem, anyway? Eddie explains, Mark said he has a job stocking shelves in a liquor store. I suppose he's been drinking all his profits. Eddie finishes replacing Paula's headlights, aims them, and Paula is ready to go. Paula asks Eddie, how much do I owe you? Eddie tells her, don't worry about it. Paula asks, are you sure? Eddie replies, yeah. We're good. Paula tells Eddie, thank you so much. I think I'll get a tank of gas while I'm here. Paula drives up to the pumps and fills her gas tank. Eddie, almost done for the day, gets back to work. Looking out from a service bay, Bobby B tells Eddie, I think we got a problem. Eddie looks outside, seeing Mr. O'Brien yelling at Paula about something. Ready for some entertainment, Eddie tells Bobby B, it looks like it's break time. Let's go see what his problem is. Eddie and Bobby B walk outside, seeing Mr. O'Brien out of control, yelling at Paula. Eddie yells out at Mr. O'Brien,
Hey, you. Stop harassing my customers. Mr. Brian yells out as if he is in a panic. What have you done to Jimmy? Eddie calmly replies, I don't know what you're talking about, Junior. So, stop harassing my customers. Mr. Brian firmly tells Eddie, I want some answers. Eddie replies, yes and no. There are your two answers. So, pick the one you want, and get your communist ass out of here. Paula laughs, thinking that it is quite funny how Eddie is handling the situation. Obviously having spoken with Jimmy today, Mr. Brian slyly asks Eddie, did you replace the headlights on that Jeep? Eddie replies, what I do here is none of your business, Junior. So, get out of here. Refusing to leave, Mr. Brian, in a trembling voice indicating his stress level, informs Eddie, Jimmy tells me that he broke the headlights on that Jeep, and he expressed deep sorrow for what he did. He even said that he offered to replace them. Jimmy also tells me that you, and that Mark guy knocked him out and somehow brought him to Hawaii. He's trying to get a plane ticket home right now. You have a lot of explaining to do. Eddie replies, here's some explaining, Junior. Saturday, at the reunion, Jimmy was so drunk he could barely stand up. He was making a big fool of himself. Everyone was laughing at him. And here's some more explaining. I was at the beach yesterday afternoon. There are 4 dozen witnesses, including 2 police officers, who saw me there. So, take a hike, Junior. Sounding a bit like Mark, Bobby B. comments, Jimmy must have been taking too much of that psycho tubin. Mr. Brian paces back and forth, exclaiming, something has got to be done about this. Eddie calmly advises Mr. Brian, so, do something. You can start by seeing a psychiatrist. I'm sure that, if you drive over to the loony bin over on Central Avenue, they can refer you to one. Mr. Brian, now irate at Eddie's suggestion that he sees a psychiatrist, exclaims, there's nothing wrong with me. You people are the ones with the problem. Eddie quickly replies, hey Junior. You're the one who failed athletes for financial gain, and you were involved in a gambling ring. I'm no expert, but I'd say you have a really bad gambling problem. Already well aware of the answer, Bobby B. interjects, asking, didn't he go to prison for that? Eddie replies, yeah. And so did his drunken son, Jimmy, too. Yelling at Eddie, Mr. Brian exclaims, I'm going to file a police report right now. And I'm going to do everything I can to get you people locked up. Joining in the verbal wrestling match, Paula comments, I can see how this is going to go over. What a joke. Mr. Brian sternly warns Paula, you just wait. You haven't heard the last of this. Paula replies, I'm sure we haven't. Good luck convincing the police department that Eddie and Mark brought Jimmy to Hawaii. That's never going to fly. There are too many witnesses who saw them both at the beach on Saturday. Oh, and by the way, filing a false police report is a crime. Eddie firmly tells Mr. Brian, why don't you just face it? Jimmy is a loser, and so are you. Seeing he is getting absolutely nowhere with either Eddie or Paula, Mr. Brian yells out, you people haven't heard the last of this. As Mr. Brian walks back to his car, Eddie tells him, hey. The best thing you can do is tell Jimmy to stay away from the bottle. He apparently has a drinking problem on top of his gambling problem. Well aware that his son, Jimmy, has a drinking problem, Mr. Brian does not respond. Mr. Brian drives off, at a loss to know what to do next. Once Mr. Brian is gone, Paula tells Eddie, that was really funny. Eddie replies, it's not over yet. He'll be back. Bobby B. comments, welcome to life at Eddie's service station. Paula asks, do the crazies come in here a lot? Bobby B. replies, more often than you think. Most of the time, we just send the crazy people over to the auto repair place down at the department store. So does Jake, across town. The mechanics at the department store are probably wondering why all the crazy people come to them. Paula tells Eddie to put her gas on Mark's tab. Eddie advises Paula, "When you get home, wash your Jeep really good." Paula asks, "Why?" Eddie explains, "The front is kind of dirty and your headlights are brand new." Quick to understand, Paula replies, "Got it." Eddie also reminds Paula, "There's no invoice for replacing your headlights, so it never happened." Paula replies, "That was good thinking." Paula then heads back to her parents' house to pick up her kids. Eddie and Bobby B get back to work, wondering what Mr. Brian will do next. Later that week, after the reunion, Captain Richard Hayes takes a break and stops by Eddie's service station. Walking into the service area, Richard asks, "What's up?" Eddie replies, "What's up?" Richard replies, "I'm taking a break. I thought I'd stop by and give you a few updates." Eddie asks, "Am I in trouble for kicking the shit out of Mr. Crum?" Richard replies, "Not at all. If someone chooses to use deadly force against another person, deadly force would be considered in court to be an appropriate countermeasure. That character is really lucky that all you did is kick the shit out of him. Anywhere else, and this Crum character could have ended up dead." Richard reports to Eddie, "Speaking about this Maurice Crum character, you really did a number on him." Eddie asks, "Really? Whatever happened to him after the reunion?" Referring to his notes, Richard explains, "He was transported to the county hospital. From what I hear, he'll be in there for at least 2 months. Get this. This Crum character ended up with a fractured skull, a fractured jaw, 2 broken arms, a broken right forearm and wrist, a fractured pelvis, 8 missing teeth, a broken nose, severe brain trauma, and 2 fractured vertebrae. With absolutely no sympathy for the man who made his life so miserable," Eddie comments, "Wow. He must have hit the ground really hard when he tripped and fell." Not missing a beat, Richard replies, "That's what I think. After all, they did find out that this character had drugs and alcohol in his system." Richard informs Eddie, "He'll be out of commission for a while. And the good news is there's enough photographic evidence to put this character away for a long time. I'll be glad to get him off the streets." Oh, and Penny even caught a picture of a bullet leaving the gun. Eddie exclaims, "Wow. That was a lucky shot." Richard replies, "I'd say so. That was purely by chance. Lynn and Penny are going to enlarge that photograph for me, and I'm going to hang it in the lobby over at the police station." With some interesting news, Richard informs Eddie, "Lynn really got those photos to us quickly. The lab we've been using has a 2 or 3 week turnaround time. From now on, the department is going to be using Lynn." Eddie replies, "Lynn does good work. Lynn developed and printed everything you see on my wall. It's going to be really convenient having her right next door." Richard asks, "What's this? She's now going to be next door?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I bought the building next door, and Mark renovated it. Lynn and Penny are leasing it, and will be moving in over the weekend." Richard replies, "That would be really convenient for us, too. We can just drop the film off rather than using a courier. It will be one less person in the chain of custody of the evidence." Richard tells Eddie, "You know, the district attorney decided to go after the gold medal in this Crum character's case." Not familiar with the type of gold medal to which Richard is referring, Eddie asks, "The gold medal? What's that?" Richard replies, "The gold medal. The gold medal in a murder or homicide case is first-degree murder or attempted murder. She has a solid case. Maurice Crum stole, not bought, a gun. This character knew exactly when and where the reunion was. He showed up with the gun, fully loaded, clearly planning to use it. Laying on the hospital bed, the few words that character was able to get out were, 'I'm going to kill Eddie. Planned, attempted to execute, and no remorse.' That's the makings of first-degree attempted murder." Eddie asks, "What's the sentence for first-degree attempted murder?" Richard replies, "In this state, usually life in prison. He's going to put in at least 30 years before he's eligible for parole." Eddie laughs and informs Richard, "Braden's father is not going to be too happy with that." Quite familiar with Mr. Crumb's prior stay in prison, Richard informs Eddie, "The last time this Crumb character was in prison, he got the red carpet treatment. Life is aren't going to be coddled with fuzzy blankets every time they get cold, or shipped off to the infirmary every time they break a fingernail." Glad to deliver the news to Eddie that Mr. Crumb will be off the streets for a long time, Richard heads out. Eddie gets back to work, happy to hear that Mr. Crumb and his dilapidated Volkswagen Beetle will not be showing up at the service station ever again. Best of all, Mr. Crumb will not be showing up at Eddie's service station with a gun for at least 30 years. By then, Mr. Crumb will be in his mid-80s, if he makes it that long. Working on the case of someone in the area selling alcohol to a minor, Erica had her work cut out for her figuring out which liquor store was the culprit. After Mark revealing that O'Brien works in a liquor store, Erica's work might have got just a little easier. Erica decides to move forward and test the theory. If she is right in her assessment, one very large problem will be solved. One Friday night, about 2 weeks after the reunion, Erica has an undercover officer shop in a liquor store. The undercover officer is the same officer who played the part of Mac when it came to busting Dean Grimsby years ago, and also played the part of Jackson Finley when Mayor Bradford Jameson was busted and taken in. Today, the undercover officer is going by the name of Frank. Frank, dressed in a suit and tie as a successful businessman, presents as having a long week at work, and is shopping for a good bottle of wine that he can enjoy with his wife. Also shopping tonight is Frank's 16-year-old daughter, who is going by the name Janice. Dressed quite inappropriately for her age, Janice is hoping to walk out with her own bottle of wine, preferably one that tastes sweet and has a screw top. Protecting Janice and backing up Frank are the two undercover officers who played the part of Mad Dog and Bad Dog when Dean Grimsby was taken in by the authorities. Mad Dog and Bad Dog are hanging out on the street, making sure everything goes as planned. Frank confidently walks into the liquor store, giving the impression he knows exactly what he wants. Seeing the well-dressed customer, O'Brien tells Frank, "If I can help you, let me know." Frank acknowledges O'Brien's remark by simply nodding. Walking back to the fine wine section, O'Brien senses that Frank's knowledge of wine is far beyond his own. O'Brien, as to not show his ignorance, lets Frank shop peacefully. O'Brien's response is exactly what Frank was hoping for. Janice walks in very shortly afterward. O'Brien, seeing the suggestively dressed female, asks, "Can I help you find something?" Janice replies, "Sure," as she walks back to the inexpensive wine section, swinging her hips on her way. O'Brien follows, watching Janice perhaps a little too closely. Clearly sending the message that she has shopped for wine before, Janice tells O'Brien, "Here it is. This is exactly what I wanted." Janice bends down slowly, grabbing the bottle of wine from the bottom shelf. Handing the bottle to O'Brien, Janice tells him, "Here. Hold this for a minute for me, please." Taking a moment to straighten her undersized outfit, Janice asks O'Brien, "So, what's your story, sweetie?" O'Brien asks, "My story." Janice replies, "Yeah, your story. Everyone has a story." Not really having an impressive past, as they are walking to the cash register, O'Brien tells Janice, "When I was in high school, I was a track star. Now, I mostly invest money in a few unconventional ways." O'Brien, of course, is full of shit. Janice exclaims, "Wow. A track star. I can definitely see that." Wanting to impress Janice, O'Brien replies, "I'm still training." At the checkout counter, O'Brien asks Janice, "Do you have an ID?" Leaning over the counter, Janice smiles and whispers, "I have a learner's permit. Is that okay?" O'Brien boldly replies, yet whispering, "If you don't have an ID, you'll have to leave me a tip." House rules. Playing along, Janice whispers to O'Brien, "Sure, sweetie. I can do that for you. How much would make your night?" O'Brien replies, "I usually get $5 for a bottle of wine. But I'll leave it up to you." O'Brien rings up the bottle of wine. Janice searches through her purse and hands over the money. O'Brien gives Janice the change, waiting for his tip. Janice hands O'Brien a $10 tip, telling him, "Thank you so much, sweetie. See you around." O'Brien replies, "Definitely. And come back sometime." Janice walks toward the door, leaving with her bottle of wine and the receipt. O'Brien stuffs the $10 bill into his pocket, adding it to the rest of the money he made on the side tonight. Outside, out of view of O'Brien, Janice hands the merchandise to Mad Dog, who tells her, "Good job." Janice replies, "That was a piece of cake." Janice removes her wire, also handing it to Mad Dog. Mad Dog asks Janice, "Did you remember to use the marked bills?" Janice replies, "Yeah. That's the only money I had." Mad Dog, however, was messing with Janice. Meanwhile, Bad Dog radios Erica, informing her that the operation was a success. Inside, Frank, also knowing the operation was a success, has selected that one very special bottle of wine, and is absolutely in no rush to get to the checkout counter. Mad Dog moves Janice to a safe location, far out of the way of any potential confrontation. Specifically, the police do not want O'Brien to ever see Janice again. Erica drives up, parking in front of the liquor store. Inside, Frank is positioned to make sure O'Brien and his co-worker do not escape through the back door. Bad Dog guards the front door, unofficially closing the liquor store, preventing anyone from entering. Erica walks in, announcing, "Jimmy O'Brien. It's so nice to see you again." O'Brien bitterly asks, "Did you guys figure out how they got me to Hawaii?" Erica replies, "No, Jimmy. I'm sorry. We haven't. We're still working on it." Erica places her hand on her gun and continues, "But we have figured out that you've been selling alcohol to minors. So, I'm here to arrest you. Please place your hands over your head." Hearing the news, O'Brien exclaims, "I never sold alcohol to a minor. It wasn't me." With a sudden change in composure, Erica exclaims, "Hands over your head. Now?" O'Brien concedes and places his hands over his head. Erica tells him, "Now, walk out from behind the counter slowly. And don't make any sudden moves." O'Brien complies, yet exclaiming, "You got the wrong person. It wasn't me." Somehow, O'Brien thinks he can finagle his way out of getting arrested. Still not believing what is happening, O'Brien exclaims, "I'm telling you. It wasn't me." Erica explains, "The girl that you just sold a bottle of wine to is 16 years old. That would make her a minor. That would put you in the position of selling alcohol to a minor. Any questions?" O'Brien exclaims, "She had ID." Not listening to O'Brien's excuses, Erica cuffs O'Brien, arrests him, and reads him his rights. O'Brien is taken away, still maintaining his innocence. Frank and Bad Dog take care of business inside the store, explaining the situation to O'Brien's co-worker. The employee cooperates fully with the police, not wanting to find himself in the same situation as O'Brien. The liquor store is officially closed for the evening by Frank, and crime scene tape is placed over the doors. The employee is sent home and instructed not to re-enter the premises. The bad news for the owner is that he will likely have to attend a court hearing where he will have a lot of explaining to do. Early the next week, Eddie comes home from work, seeing Kathy hard at work. Seeing a spread of papers on the dining room table, Eddie asks, "Wow. What are you up to, Katerina?" Kathy replies, "I'm counting our money and adding up all of our assets. Eddie asks, "Really? Why?" Kathy replies, "Because I want to know how much we have." Knowing that he and Kathy have enough money, Eddie asks, "Why the sudden curiosity?" Kathy replies, "Because I don't know exactly how much we have." Knowing Kathy is up to something, Eddie tells Kathy, "Okay, Katerina Karakova, out with it." Kathy smiles and replies, "Out with what?" "And, by the way, it's Katerina Boganskaya now. Don't tell me you forgot." Eddie tells Kathy, "It's kind of obvious that you're up to something." It's all these vague non-answers to simple questions that gives it away. Kathy relents, telling Eddie, "Okay. So, I'm adding up all of our assets because me and Paula are having a race." Eddie laughs and replies, "Since when do you have to know what your assets are before you race?" Kathy replies, "It's not a running race. We're having a race to $250 million. Eddie asks, "Really? Who's winning?" Kathy replies, "I am." Eddie asks, "By how much?" Kathy replies, "By a few million." Eddie asks, "So, how much do we have?" Kathy replies, "About $248 million. Paula only has $234 million. She's going to lose." Eddie comments, "Wow. You guys have been competing with each other since grade school." Kathy replies, "Yeah. And, I always win." Paula, were she present, would strongly disagree that Kathy always wins. Thinking for a moment, Eddie asks, "Why am I working?" Kathy replies, "Because you wanted to be a mechanic." Eddie replies, "Well, if we have $248 million, I'm cutting back to 3 days a week." Kathy tells Eddie, "That would be a good idea, especially since we'll have another baby soon. And Eddie Jr. will be going to school. There will be a lot to do around here before the baby comes." Eddie asks, "Like what?" Kathy replies, "Well, you know. Like stuff around the house." As far as Eddie knows, there is not much to do around the house. With maintenance always high on Eddie's list, everything around the house is in perfect condition. Now knowing for sure that Kathy is up to something again, Eddie asks, "Like what kind of stuff is there to do around the house, Katerina?" Kathy replies, "You know. Little stuff that we have to do before the baby comes. Like adding two bedrooms, and that sort of stuff." Eddie, repeating partially what Kathy said, responds, "Little stuff, like adding two bedrooms." "Hmm. That's not exactly little stuff." Kathy energetically replies, "Well, yeah. But, we can take out the bathroom on the other side of the house, and put in a hallway to two more bedrooms and two bathrooms." Eddie agrees, telling Kathy, "That's actually a really great plan. While we're at it, we can probably add a playroom for the kids." Kathy smiles, glad to hear that Eddie likes her plan. Eddie points out, "You know, if we hire Mark to do the work, Paula could gain on your race to $250 million. Kathy replies, "No, she won't." Eddie asks, "How can you be so confident?" Kathy stands up and replies, "Because I put a shitload of money in the stock market, and by the end of the month, I'll emerge as the winner. So, I already won." Eddie replies, "Well, I'll get Mark over here sometime and see what he thinks." Kathy smiles, happy that she'll have a little more space for the kids. Almost as an afterthought, Eddie casually asks Kathy, "Have you counted what's in the safe at the service station?" Kathy suddenly yells out, "No. I forgot about that." As she is quickly shuffling a few papers, Kathy asks, "How much do we have there?" Eddie replies, "I don't know. There's at least 3,000 ounces of gold, and I have no idea how much cash. It just keeps accumulating." Now more excited, Kathy asks, "Can you count it for me sometime? I could have already won." Eddie explains, "If we have $248 million, you won." Doing a little math in her head, Kathy exclaims, "Yes. I won. Eddie laughs, wondering how Kathy and Paula decided to have a race to $250 million. But after all, Kathy and Paula have always been in competition with each other. Now curious, Eddie asks Kathy, "So, what exactly did you win by winning?" Kathy replies, "A pizza." Eddie laughs and tells Kathy, "I should have known." Monday morning, as Eddie is opening the service station, Captain Richard Hayes drives in. Captain Hayes actually visits Eddie's service station more often now that he is a police captain. One can easily conclude that the officer misses patrolling the streets and gets out of the office every chance he gets. Captain Hayes also visits Lynn Burson's photography studio quite often, delivering film obtained by the detectives that needs to be developed. Captain Hayes helps himself to a bagel and coffee, which was just delivered, and takes a seat in the office. Eddie asks Richard, "What's up?" Richard replies, "I really didn't want to come to work this week. School is going to start in a few weeks, and I'll be away on vacation next week. I guess, in my head, I'm on vacation a week early." Eddie tells Richard, "I know what you mean. I didn't feel like coming to work today either. And Eddie Jr. is starting kindergarten this year. So, Eddie asks me, am I going to learn how to fix cars in kindergarten?" He was kind of disappointed when I told him he wasn't. Richard replies, "It sounds like you have a mechanic in training." Eddie laughs and informs Richard, "I think so. At home, he's always watching me when I'm working on cars. And occasionally, he comes to work here with me." Eddie asks, "Where are you guys going on vacation?" Richard replies, "We're headed down to the Bahamas for a week. Sandy is really looking forward to it. And I can see it now. The kids aren't going to want to leave. And when we get back, it's back to school for them." Richard, following Eddie's investment advice, has been able to take some really nice vacations over the years. Once Eddie and Richard catch up on their personal lives, Richard informs Eddie, "You're not going to believe this. This Jimmy O'Brien character has claimed you, and Mark transported him to Hawaii." Eddie laughs and exclaims, "Not this crap again. Has O'Brien been talking to the Chucky?" Richard replies, "You would think. And this O'Brien character's father is demanding a full-scale investigation. I tell you, these characters are a real piece of work. If it was up to me, I'd round them all up and ship them off to that facility over on Central Avenue." Eddie tells Richard, "I can tell you exactly what happened if you want." Richard asks, "Really? What's that?" Eddie informs Richard, "At the reunion, O'Brien was overindulging in alcohol. So, Mark told O'Brien, the more you weigh, the more the alcohol affects you. O'Brien is so stupid that he actually believed Mark. So, O'Brien, since he weighs a little more than 100 pounds, tested Mark's theory. Anyway, O'Brien got seriously drunk and made a fool of himself during the whole reunion. Actually, O'Brien doesn't need to be drunk to make a fool of himself. He does that quite well without alcohol. So, anyway, O'Brien told Mark, I'm going to get you back for this. You just wait. I heard it. Bobby B., Erica, Johnson, Barbara, and a few others heard it too. I guess this Hawaii shit was the payback. He should have come up with something better than that Hawaii crap all over again. I thought the Chucky wore that one out." Richard asks, "Did you talk to Erica over the weekend?" Eddie replies, "No. Bobby B. and Erica didn't make it to pizza Saturday morning. After pizza, I had a few things around the house to do. And we were in our pool a lot." Richard explains, "Erica worked late Friday night. That's probably why she didn't make it. Erica took this O'Brien character in late Friday night. The undercover officers caught him selling alcohol to a minor." Not surprised, Eddie replies, "That's probably only the tip of the iceberg." Raising his eyebrows, Richard asks, "Really? Eddie replies, yeah. We're talking about Jimmy O'Brien here. I've never known O'Brien and his father to do anything legitimately. They are a bunch of communist crooks. And they're not even good at being crooks. Besides, it sounds to me like the Chucky and O'Brien are taking the same kind of dope. Richard replies, I can't say I disagree. Eddie asks, how much time will O'Brien be doing? Richard replies, in this state, the sale of alcohol to a minor is a misdemeanor. Since he works in a liquor store and supposedly knows better, this O'Brien character is going to get more than a slap on the wrist. This character will probably get close to the maximum, which is 90 days in jail plus a fine. Eddie replies, then, he'll be back on the streets doing something else underhanded. With some good news, Richard reveals, but with this O'Brien character off the streets, we'll see if the underage drinking problem slows down for a while. Eddie asks, how would you know? Richard replies, all you have to do is look for the empty bottles behind any school or in any park. Another good place to find them is along the expressway service road, in the area where the road is lined with businesses. We know where the kids hang out. And now that school is going to be back in session, the problem is expected to get worse, especially on Friday and Saturday night. Richard knows everything that goes on around town, far more than anyone would ever suspect. And if Richard knows, his officers know as well. Bobby B. rolls into the station, driving his dune buggy. Walking into the office and seeing Captain Hayes, Bobby B. asks, what's up? Eddie replies, we were just talking about O'Brien getting busted. Bobby B. laughs and exclaims, first, the Chucky goes down in flames. And now, O'Brien gets burned by alcohol. I've never thought I'd see Erica this happy getting these guys off the streets. Richard replies, Erica is a good officer. She knows her stuff. She really deserved the promotion she got. Bobby B. laughs and mentions, but she's running out of crazy people to arrest. Richard chuckles and replies, trust me. We'll never run out of crazy people out there. You take one in, and two more appear in their place. Eddie, Bobby B., and Richard talk for a while longer, catching up on their weekend. Once Richard heads back to the police station, Eddie still does not feel like working today. Eddie sits at his desk and asks Bobby B., what do you have going on back in the shop? Bobby B. replies, I'm rebuilding the head on that piece of shit sports car that overheated. Eddie asks, how much did you have to shave it? Bobby B. replies, 1 millimeter, this time. The same engine overheated 2 years ago, and I shaved it 1 millimeter then. Eddie tells Bobby B., that's a serious problem with those guys. You can't put an aluminum head on a cast iron block. When the thermostat fails and the car overheats by 5 degrees, it costs at least $1,000. Bobby B. tells Eddie, the guy won't be back until next week to pick it up. So, if there's something else that you want me to work on, I can fit it in. Unexpectedly walking through the door, Lynn Burson announces, I'm moving in. Eddie replies, that's really great. Lynn informs Eddie of the plan, explaining, we have a lot of stuff to move, so it will probably take us a few days. So, me and Penny will be in and out over the next week. Eddie asks, did you hire movers? Lynn replies, no. With movers, everything has to be boxed up. It's a serious pain to box up all my studio equipment. And the last thing I'm going to do is let movers destroy it all. So, we're moving everything a little at a time. Eddie asks, do you need any help? Lynn replies, when we get to the big stuff I will. But that will probably be Wednesday or Thursday. Not really wanting to work on cars today, Eddie tells Lynn, if you want, me and Bobby B. can help you move. Lynn replies, if you guys have the time, I would be really, really grateful. Eddie, volunteering Bobby B.'s time as well as his own, tells Lynn, sure. We can help you. Suddenly more excited, Lynn thinks she might be able to pull the move off in 1 or 2 days. Lynn accepts Eddie's offer, telling him, "Sure. If you have the time." Eddie tells Lynn, "Okay. I'll drive home, get my dune buggy, head over to 2nd Street, and pick up the trailer." Lynn exclaims, "Wait. You have a trailer too?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. I'm guessing you want the enclosed trailer." At a loss for words, Lynn exclaims, "Wow. Sure." Eddie tells Bobby B, "I'm going home and get my dune buggy. Man the station until I get back." Bobby B takes a seat behind the desk, reading the morning newspaper. While Eddie heads home, Lynn heads over to her new studio, unloading the few items that she was able to fit in her Mustang. By late afternoon, Eddie and Bobby B have all of Lynn's photography equipment and furniture moved from her old studio to her new studio. Lynn and Penny spend a few minutes unpacking a couple of items, but are ready to call it a day. Truth be told, Eddie and Bobby B's pace was a bit fast for Lynn and Penny. But they'll have the rest of the week to get situated, which will be quite easy compared with their original plan. Eddie and Bobby B also call it a day and head home.